Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I love to be a pretty little girl in kink scenes. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a porn maker and definitely a very good boy.
That intro made it sound like we're going to talk about age play this episode, and like, we might, but that's not actually what the episode is about.
No, definitely. I mean, not exclusively. Yeah. I wanted to talk about this idea. I think we've covered it on the show like years back, but I definitely wanted to revisit it. In this idea of like kinky archetypes, which I think of as almost like the character tropes of kink, or like these pre-built little roles that we can slip into. And obviously you can customize them, but there are these, I don't know, ideas of what a submissive could look like. And obviously they exist for dominance as well, but I think we're going to start out by talking about submission because we are who we are. But yeah, I think of these archetypes as, I don't know, kind of these traditional, I want to say flavors of submission, but this is not a Vore episode. Flavors of submissive. It's the honey barbecue. Anyway.
I'm a sweet and sour submissive.
Those are brats. but anyway, yeah, I'm curious if you have anything you want to like add to that when we talk about what we mean by kinky archetypes. And also, I'm just curious if you could talk about any ways that you find them particularly helpful or not so much.
Yeah, it occurred to me that they could be called subtypes of submission. Yes. Or subtypes of dominance. Yeah, I think that when I think of kinky archetypes, what I mainly think of is like before I realized I was kinky, a lot of what scared me away from identifying that way was that I was not seeing myself reflected in mainstream representations of kink. Things like Secretary, or I think this was pre-Fifty Shades maybe, but, you know, like mainstream BDSM porn also will often have like a very strict femdom, or like a lot of like punitive disciplinary type stuff, like a dominant being mean, a dominant like whipping you to whip you into shape, literally, stuff like that. And I was just like, that's not what I'm into. I want to be submissive in a way where I'm like this precious little angel who's being taken care of. And I just wasn't seeing that represented in kink media, although you do see it in a lot of other places. Like, I always think of Veruca Salt. She's just like an icon to me in terms of like bossy little girls. And, you know, I see little, you know, glimpses here and there of things like that that feel like these patchwork pieces of my kink identity, but I was not seeing them always like represented in actual kink media. So for me, it was freeing to find out that there are more kinky archetypes beyond this like sort of punitive, mean, dominant style. And there's more different ways to be a submissive as well.
Yeah, I remember making a post in some message board that was like, this like spanking thing seems really interesting. Like, I'm really curious about kink, but I don't want to be punished. Right. Can I still want to like experience pain? Can I still do that? Yes. Spoilers. Yes. But I definitely empathize with that impulse to be like, well, I have seen submission comes with this particular cluster of traits and those aren't like, there are pieces of that that I identify with, but not the one prototype that we kind of see.
Yeah.
So I also found it really helpful to see these other models and flavors of what kind of energies I want to inhabit as a submissive. And also, I also find it helpful because I find archetypes work as almost like pre-made characters. Like if you're playing a D&D campaign and someone's going to hand you a character sheet that's already filled out and everything, like you're skipping all of the basics of like, all of the little facets of what kind of submission do I want to be. No, I am taking this ready-made idea of, oh, I am going to be a submissive good boy teacher's mm-hmm. pet today. That is the role that I have been given. I know what that looks like in the world, and I can lean into that. And I have found bits of these archetypes, whether they are through, like you talked about, Veruca Salt, sometimes I do look to media representations to be like, what does that actually look like in practice to inhabit this energy? Mm-hmm. But also just other kinksters I know, or erotica, or ideas of this sort of thing. I definitely look to that to, like, help build up this, like you were saying, this patchwork idea of my submission. Mm-hmm. But I do find sometimes they can get restrictive if I mm-hmm. identify too closely with a specific one.
Yeah. I think that they can be sort of like sexual orientation labels in that mm-hmm. a lot of their purpose is to help you like find community and also communicate to other people what you're into and who you are in this sort of shorthand way. So like if I'm explaining mm-hmm. to a new person that I'm a submissive, there's so many different kinds of things that that could mean. And I found like often, especially if somebody hasn't really done much or any kink before, they might be kind of intimidated hearing that. Whereas if mm-hmm. I say, I like to be a good little submissive girl taken care of by like a nurturing dominant figure, a lot of people are like, oh, I can do that. I can slot myself into that. But also just mm-hmm. like with sexual orientation labels, you know, it can only take you so far. Like I'm bisexual, but there's a million different ways to be bisexual. It can mean a million different things to different people. So ultimately, mm-hmm. you know, you can hear someone's label and take it at face value. But if you want to know the details, you have to ask about the details.
Absolutely. And we wind up in this, like, yes, these archetypes and these labels are really helpful in that they allow us to see other people who might want to do things like us, right? Mm-hmm. And I could get really wedded to a puppy identity or something and suddenly want to be dominant and be like, well, I've never seen a dominant puppy, so I guess that's mm-hmm. not a thing that's open to me, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than thinking about these archetypes as something that we can, as like building blocks, as starting points, as things that we take from the world and customize to suit us. Mm-hmm. I think that is, I don't even know how this sentence started, but I think that is the helpful way to think of them versus thinking of them as these like restrictive things that we need to fit ourselves into. And let me learn everything about what being a puppy looks like, what being a good boy looks like, what being a, you know, leather faggot looks like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I read all the right books, I'll know how to do it right and fit into it perfectly. I think that's less kind of what we're going for here, although I have seen people try for that.
Yeah, it's sort of like when you're a kid and you're playing pretend. It's like you might be playing house mm-hmm. and you might go, you're the mom and I'm the dad and this person is the dog. But like they're all going to put their own spin on that. It's just sort of a starting point.
Right. And that kind of gets to, I mean, that kind of gets at the answer to my next question here. But I wanted to ask, like, where do we find kinky archetypes? Is there like a definitive list somewhere that we can find all of the archetypes and pick from them, or?
I mean, there's not. I do think that it would potentially be useful if people have like compiled lists, because mm-hmm. as with a resource like my book, 101 Kinky Things, like if there's a long list of something, I feel like that can always help you brainstorm. Like you're always going to find something that even if it's not that specific thing that you're into, you'll be like, oh, that reminds me of this thing that I like. Mm-hmm. But in general, I pull a lot of archetypes from media, like we were saying. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that like we're both people who really like TV and movies, and I'll just be watching a show or a movie and be like, oh, that's hot. Like, there's something sort of like erotically frictiony about this relationship between these two types of characters or this power dynamic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'll kind of like apply that to my own identity and think about like, how can I do a version of that that's comfortable for me? Mm-hmm. And that's often what I recommend for people exploring, especially any kind of role play, is like just grab a media property that you and your partner are both familiar with. Maybe you're going to role play as Mulder and Scully from The X-Files because you love that show and you get that dynamic. And it's like, you know, there's stuff going on there. And through doing that, you can find out a lot about what you like.
Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely use media a lot for this. I am definitely, like, a huge nerd around TV and things, so I love the idea of, like, playing into these characters and these roles that you already know. Mm-hmm. I also find it can be helpful to talk to other kinksters about the language they identify with. Mm-hmm. You may find other folks who identify similar to you, the language they use may or may not resonate. But it's also helpful to find out what other kinksters call this thing that you do, even if that's not the word that you're going to pick up on. Mm-hmm. Like my partner and I's dynamic falls under, for many kinksters, an MS dynamic. 24/7, very weaved into our lives, power dynamic. Mm-hmm. It's not language we use, but it's worth knowing that that's where I go to look up stuff that I want to know about what I do.
Yeah. In terms of, like, finding a list online to pull from, mm-hmm. even though I don't think that that's necessarily what you should always do, but this also reminds me of, like, archetypal situations rather than just archetypal characters. Mm-hmm. And when I think of that, I think of fan fiction tropes, things like enemies to lovers, like they meet and they hate each other and then it turns out that they're attracted to each other, or like there's a fan fiction trope of like, oh no, we have to stay in the same bed for some convoluted reason, but I don't like you, but I don't want to fuck you, but do I want to fuck you? It's like there's so many of these, and you can like mix and match, like what if you do Mulder and Scully but they have to sleep in the same bed? I don't know, it seems great.
I love that. This has me thinking, like, you have one of those games where you pull, like, a slip of paper out of each mason jar with, like, these are the characters and this is the situation.
That would be so fun. Or, like, that could be role-play dice. That would be incredible.
Yes. Oh, and that would just be fun to, like, create with your partner, too. Be like, all right, take turns writing people down. Because then you'd wind up pulling things out and you'd be like, did you put this one in here? I'm not... How many times did you put Geralt of Rivia in here? I know you love The Witcher, but come on, like
there would be such fun combinations too. Like there would be like Jake Peralta and Charles Boyle, except they're like having a sleepover and like doing each other's nails.
Okay, but and then you'd also wind up with like crossovers from Jake Peralta and Captain America. Like ooh. You would just, if you're just throwing shit in there, you just wind up with just bonkers pairings. Anyway, we've gone off.
Yeah, we love fan fiction too much.
Off the rails. I do think, though, that, like, any sort of erotic media, whether it is intentionally erotic or not, is a really helpful resource for this stuff. Talking to your community can be a really helpful resource for this stuff. So you mentioned Veruca Salt and, like, just wanting to be a very good girl often. I'm curious if you could talk about some other, like... What are some of the submissive archetypes you do identify with? And, like, what are some of the traits you associate with those archetypes?
Mm. Yeah, so I mostly think of Veruca Salt in the context of, like, when I'm trying to be dominant, because I think she's one of the prime examples of a little girl who, like, unmistakably is the dominant one in her relationship with her father. So, you know, I have struggled with being dominant for a long time because I don't feel I have the confidence, and because kind of my kinky persona by default is this little girl persona because of the kinks that I have. And so thinking about my dominant self as being Veruca Salt-esque was really freeing for me because I was like, oh, here's a media model. Like she's a little bit more brusque and demanding than I typically am in that role, but it's a fun archetype to think about. I also love, speaking of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I love the character of Amy Santiago on that show in terms of like a submissive stereotype or archetype rather, because she is so smart and competent and driven and ambitious, but at the same time, she's really in part driven by wanting to please people who she looks up to. And so I think that she's a really good representation of like a person who is sort of submissively oriented in that way, but like is not a wallflower or, you know, a doormat. I also really love the movie Secretary. I think it's just like super classic and was a really big moment for me in terms of discovering my kink identity. And so much of that movie is about like taking pride in a job well done to impress somebody mm-hmm. that you like. And that hit me really hard. Like, there's some stuff about that movie that I really don't relate to at all. Like, they're doing like pony play stuff at one point, and she's like crawling around on all fours holding a piece of paper in her mouth and stuff like that. That's like a bit more extreme than I typically want to go, but the fact that she was working for him too. Like high protocol, and you know, not really my jam, but I love that she gets to be smart. I love that she's like sometimes punished, but it's clearly within this relationship of like, I'm punishing you because I know that you can do so much better than this and because I want you to improve. So it's almost like a teacher-student type of relationship at times, which I'm very into. Yeah, I would say that those are kind of some of the main ones that I think about a lot. What are your fave ones?
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more really quick from you about like the student archetype though too, because I do feel like that, like, less attributed to a specific person, but just this idea of like teacher's pet good student and the ways that that like very much feels fairly core to your submissive identity, or at least a component to it.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie Dead Poets Society?
It has been on my list for forever. Because I love Robert Sean Leonard,
And like, I will give you content notes if and when you ever decide to watch it, because there's some heavy shit. But there's a scene in Dead Poets Society where Ethan Hawke, as this very young, shy, socially anxious high school kid, is given this assignment by Robin Williams, his new English teacher, to write a poem. And he's so anxious about the idea of performing this poem in front of the class that he actually just doesn't write a poem and shows up and goes, I didn't do it, because he thinks he won't have to do it. And Robin Williams is like, nope, you're not getting off that easily. And he brings him up to the front of the class, and he's like sort of circling around him and asking him questions to try to like pull a poem out of him. He's like, what do you think of when I say this word, or when you look at this picture, and like, what does that remind you of? And he's just like doing this extended process, and it's shot in this way where it's like, this character is so anxious, he does not want to be doing this. But Robin Williams, as his teacher, is like dominating him through it, essentially. And even though that's like a male-male relationship, I always really liked that relationship. It reminds me a lot of the type of DS that I really like to do, which is that sort of like, I am going to be a little mean to you and I am going to challenge you and push you, but it's because I care about you. It's because I think you can do great things. And it's ultimately for your own good. And like, even though that student is so anxious going into that scene, like you can see that it's in some ways like gratifying and a growth experience for him when he actually manages to do it. Yeah, that was the first place my mind went. I actually can't think of very many examples of like female student that jump out at me as like having inspired me a lot on this. Like, I think that a lot of my thoughts about that come from my own experiences of just like having crushes on teachers.
Right. Well, and I think that makes a lot of sense, because I don't think like our understanding of what a student isn't necessarily made up of like one individual formative experience. Like, yes, you can point to pictures of it, but I think an archetype can just exist as like, no, this is what my collective understanding of a good student looks like, right? From all of these ideas. And you can, you know, yes, you can be playing as that anxious student in Dead Poets Society who's going to overcome something really scary, and you can just be, you know, what that student looks like. Because I definitely, I definitely struggled finding, like, depictions of submission, especially going through my transition and looking at, like, masculine ideas of submission and what that looked like, especially because, like, you know, and without that looking passive in the way you talked about, like, Amy isn't a wallflower, but is eager to serve. And often I wound up in this, falling back on this kind of sidekick archetype, which is a thing that I really enjoy in media as well as in kink. Whereas, like, similar to, it can be similar to the teacher in that, like, the dominant in relation to this person is often in, like, a mentor-type role, mm-hmm. is often, like, slightly more experienced and, you know, I mean, leadership, all the stuff that goes into dominance, right? But I think of the submissive as, like, service-oriented and, like, eager to help them succeed in doing the things, which I quite enjoy. And, like, definitely identify with. I definitely identify with, I guess just the archetype of the masochist, of someone who enjoys the experience of suffering.
Yeah.
Right? Like, whatever the very traditional idea of that is, right? Someone who just enjoys pain and discomfort and suffering and endurance and all of that.
Did you ever see Little Shop of Horrors?
Ash has, it is on Ash's list to show me.
There's, so in the movie, there's a character in it who's like a sadistic dentist. And in the movie, he has this patient who's played by Bill Murray for some reason. And this patient is like a hardcore masochist. Like at one point he comes in to see this dentist and he's like, I want a long, slow root canal. And it's just, it's so wild because this movie was made decades ago and it's one of the most explicit demonstrations of like sadomasochism in a mainstream movie that I've ever seen in my life.
That's wild. I love when they like stumble into things that when like, I don't know, movies and stuff stumble into that. Like it's always interesting also when they're not trying to make it like the main thing. I don't know. When media tries to tackle kink as like the core component of its movie or TV show, I feel like they rarely do it well. But sometimes when it's just a side thing, those are the times where sometimes I feel like I see myself. Not in this root canal guy. I don't fuck with dentists. But like, you know, it, in general, sometimes I see stuff in the sidelines and I'm like, nah, good. Kinksters are weirdos like that. That's fair. Yeah, I'll give you that one.
That just, that makes me think about House MD, which I know is a show that we both love a lot. And I think that there's so much interesting DS going on in that show. Like, I always identified strongly with the character of Cameron, who is like one of Dr. House's employees, like from the early days of the show. And she is like at first kind of into him and wanting to impress him and looking up to him. And then as the show goes on, she kind of comes into her own a little bit more and becomes more confident. And she's more comfortable calling him out when she thinks he's wrong. But there's still this like mentor-mentee relationship. It's very hot to me.
Yeah, I watching it this time around, I also don't realize like how much Wilson has the power in his relationship with House.
Ooh,
like this time through differently. It's quite, I quite enjoy it. And I do like, I do quite enjoy in media, at least the trope of the like charismatic, slightly erratic submissive who is like kept in place by like the calmer whatever kind of dominant and that somewhat feels like what's happening there but yeah no there I am rewatching that recently and it is a different show when I am 30 than it was when I was 18. That's
that archetype you just mentioned is like the total flip side of the typical archetype in Sherlock fan fiction, which is like this erratic, like literally insane dominant of Sherlock who is like taking control of this like mild-mannered, comparatively sane submissive in John Watson, which I love about that dynamic because there's so much trust involved in that, that John has to be like, well, I mean, he's literally crazy, but like also I know that he's very smart and like I trust him and I like him, so I'm going to do what he says. Like, I just love that dynamic so much. It was like a big part of me realizing I was submissive was reading Sherlock fan fiction. So, yeah. This is just the episode where we talk about media properties that we get horny over, I guess.
I mean, yeah. So another one that's coming to mind, My next question here is if there are any submissive archetypes you're attracted to. And I realize I said it as a different question. Honestly, they are, the Venn diagram has a lot of overlap. But one that comes to mind for me is both an archetype I identify with and one that like I enjoy being in relationship with for submissives is it's akin to that sidekick role. But I think of Donna in West Wing, Donna and Josh.
Okay.
In the way that she is his assistant, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And has no problem like pushing back on things. Like often she plays the role of like asking him the questions to get him to think about the policies that he's making. And like, she will play mm-hmm. like devil's advocate throughout an episode with him and just about like silly little things. Like she'll be like, no, this is impacting my life in this very direct way. So I'm going to sit down and make you talk about it. Mm-hmm. Or she will like, sets things up so that he can be successful at his job and is also willing to look at him and be like, no, you're being an idiot right now. Let me tell you why you're being an idiot. In yeah. a way that she knows he will listen to,
mm-hmm.
which like is a valuable skill in serving someone and something that like I don't think we necessarily look at as like a submissive trait, but I think being able to, like, call someone to task on their own shit is, at least for me, it is key to serving me. I don't know about the rest of the world. But
yeah, that reminds me of Melina Williams and her yeah. spouse and how a lot of their guest dynamic is her calling him on his shit, which I find admirable. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, submissive archetypes that I am attracted to, I think immediately of unrequited love storylines, which has always been sort of like a fetishy thing for me, maybe because like my first sexual relationship literally was with someone who was in love with me and I didn't feel the same way, and we negotiated this like pretty unhealthy, but like it happened.
Pretty unhealthy, but you know,
we were like fucking for a year and a half, even though all of that was going on, and like that's not a choice I would make now, but you know, mm-hmm. I think that it is kind of written in my brain at this point. And so I enjoy, as a dominant, I enjoy the archetype of, like, you're so in love with me, you're so into me, and I could sort of take or leave you, and so I have some power there. I think in part because, like, I have a lot of insecurity about my own attractiveness. So, like, the person who comes to mind for me for this is the guy in Love Actually who brings those cue cards to Keira Knightley's house.
I have literally only seen that movie parodied, but I...
Oh, my God, yes, babe. Sometimes we have to, like, get high and watch it together and just make fun of it the whole time.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, it's such a bad movie in terms of sex and gender stuff, but like, I don't know. But so Keira Knightley is obviously very beautiful, and in the movie she's married to a super hot guy, and it's like a happy marriage. She's happy with it, but the husband's best friend is like secretly in love with her, and he shows up at her doorstep to confess to her his feelings about her via cue card so that her husband will not hear. And she goes, there's carolers at the door, and he plays Christmas carols on a boombox so that the husband won't be suspicious. It's dumb as fuck. But this guy is like...
just hand her like, I'm just imagining him sitting home on his floor surrounded by giant cue cards and Sharpies. And, like, you make one that, oh, the proportions aren't wrong, so you got to do another one. Like, yeah, just write her a note. Send the bitch a text. Anyway, no, go on.
Send the bitch a text. Oh, babe, I think that the kinkiest scene that you would like the most in terms of this particular relationship is at one point she comes over to his house. He was videoing at her wedding. He's like, he was taking video. And she goes, I saw you videoing. Our wedding video got all fucked up. Can I see the footage that you have? Because I just want some nice footage of me on my wedding day. And he's like, okay. And he shows it to her, and it's all like extreme close ups on like her face and her like dress and like nobody else. Like he was literally just filming her. It's super creepy. She's watching this, and over the course of watching this, at first she's like, huh, what? And then she like realizes that he's like definitely super in love with her and definitely wants to fuck her a lot.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, that really plays into like my fantasies about like being the person who's extremely powerful because of being extremely wanted. And like, I played that out in very unhealthy ways when I was younger, and kink gives me an opportunity to play it out in more consensual ways. So that's nice.
Yeah. Oh, that has me thinking about, like, I don't know how much my archetypes are also like, I definitely enjoy occasionally leaning into like the like flustered nerdy boy who just wants to be cool.
Oh, so good.
Like, who will do whatever it takes to like impress this person or be part of the cool kids or whatever. Like, that is definitely an archetype I lean into. And then also, like, on my more dominant side, the like, I talk a lot about being into the dominant persona of like the capital B, capital G, bad guy. I am a bad boy at tops. I think you need to be higher than 5'3" to be a bad guy. But I am also not nefarious enough. I have, yes.
Are you like a Danny Zuko bad boy, or are you like an actual bad boy, like doing drugs under the underpass kind of bad boy?
I always think of Bender in Breakfast Club.
Oh my God! As he's the so archetype hot. For that, he's so hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Breakfast so, Club. Like, Breakfast I mean, Club is like just full weed. Of stereotypes.
Yeah,
it's full of stereotypes and archetypes, and oh yeah, like I definitely had a lot of burgeoning fantasies about that, in particular about the relationship between this like goody two shoes girl and this bad boy who like is clearly attracted to her, but also kind of is like ridiculing her lightly throughout because he can't he can't be vulnerable enough to be like, I like you, I would like to go out with you. He has to be like, oh, you're such a goody two shoes, you're such a prude. Like, he can't like relax his his toxic masculinity enough to just tell her he likes her.
Exactly. He's the worst. He would be insufferable in person. And yet.
Man, yeah.
That gave me so many feelings. But yeah, that's definitely a flavor of like kinky persona that I definitely like to like slide into. Mm-hmm. In that, like, I don't know. He's as bad as you can be at 17, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, maybe you'll catch him smoking a joint under the bleachers. Ooh, you know, but like that flavor of like,
God, he's so hot. I have to rewatch that movie. And I
do too.
I don't, maybe this is problematic that I'm saying he's hot. I don't know how old that actor was when he did that movie, but
I'm pretty sure it's an instance of like 30-year-olds pretending to be high schoolers. We're pretty good at that. As humans, that seems to be what we do.
Yeah. I think part of what draws me to that character too is that like in my entire time at school, I was always that goody two shoes person. Like, sometimes I struggled a little bit academically because of depression or whatever, but when I was okay, I was always getting good grades and always felt kind of nerdy and kind of socially separate from the people who were a little more rambunctious. And so there is something very erotically charged to me about that divide between like the good kids and the bad kids, almost kind of like a Romeo Juliet kind of situation where it's like, oh, people really don't want us to fuck, but what if we fuck though?
Yeah. I was definitely somewhere between like the goth weirdo girl and the kid who got a fake ID so he could vote. Like, that was I was definitely like nestled between those groups in high school.
But I wanted to be Bender. That storyline takes on such a different significance now that like Trump, etc., are like voter fraud is a real thing that actually matters and happens at a significant scale.
So you mentioned this like kind of bratty childlike persona as like one of your ways that you're able to access this dominant role. Are there any other like traditionally submissive archetypes that you enjoy or might enjoy seeing in a more dominant role?
I love the idea of the dominant who knows everything that's going on in your life and always knows what choices you should make. And like, I'm thinking of is it Alfred from Batman, who we've talked about before? Yeah. I'm not a Batman person, but I know about that. But just this sort of like butler figure who's like literally aware of all the logistics of your life, probably even more so than you are, because that's their job, or that's their self-appointed job, as the case may be.
Alfred definitely has that kind of energy, though. Very service-oriented. Like, it's not quite... Like, Bruce Wayne is definitely his boss. And yet, there are definitely adaptations of Alfred that, like... No, he can tell Bruce Wayne what to do. Yeah. Like, there are definitely... depending on the telling of Batman or whatever, like, there are versions where he is more father-like than not. And, like, where, like, yeah, he is employed by Bruce Wayne. I don't know so much that Bruce is in charge, though.
And it reminds me, too, of, like, some of the Sherlock fanfiction I've read as well. Like, even though Sherlock in the fanfic I've read is usually the dominant, because he's so erratic and he's so neuroatypical, often John has to be like, well, you can't do that because that's physically not possible, or like, you can't do that because that's socially not acceptable, so do this instead. And Sherlock will thank him and take the note, or not sometimes. But it's really interesting to me that John can be the submissive but also sometimes sort of step into a more dominant role. And I think, like, because I am, like, technically switchy but, like, much more submissive leaning, I am drawn to archetypes of dominance that are also a little bit submissive. Like, I still call my partner daddy even when I'm being dominant, in that bratty Veruca Salt kind of way, because I'm small but I'm still dominant. And that's, like, a real thing. You can mix and match. You don't have to, like, take the whole archetype and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, on the other side of the coin with that, I often, I am always daddy even when I'm submitting, often, because that is definitely, like, the archetype I, like, it is an archetype I identify with in my relationship, but it doesn't necessarily always mean dominance, which is fun and is a thing that I have known to be true for a while, but still took some getting used to in practice. So I'm also curious... if there are any activities or kinks or types of play that you enjoy that you attribute to, like, a specific archetype. Like, when you're in this flavor of submission, you enjoy whatever, but not other times. Like, for me, rope is very much a, like, floaty, passive, blissed out kind of submission. And I can't really fathom bringing... Well, I could, but it would... totally change the kind of rope scene I was having to bring, like, a more bratty, playful flavor of my submission to rope. Like, that he's not the guy that the bratty guy that curses out the person hitting me is not the guy who gets tied up in rope. It's just, it's a different guy. So I'm curious if you similarly have, like, any activities that you link to specific headspaces or archetypes that you like to inhabit.
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind for me is I'm very sensitive to, like, feedback or criticism because of childhood trauma around that. And this is something that all my partners always know because I make it very clear. It's important. Please don't trigger me if you can help it. But I will say that, like, within the context of, like, a teacher-student type of dynamic, it does feel easier to accept feedback because that is, like, explicitly part of that dynamic. And so, like, you know, if I'm giving a blowjob as this sort of student figure, whether that's a literal student or just sort of that's the vibe of the scene, it is much easier for me to hear, like, take it deeper, or, like, you're not going fast enough, or use your hand more, whatever, because part of what's hot to me about that is the instruction. And so I think that container, that container gives me, like, a really nice space where, like, it doesn't feel like a personal attack. If someone says your blowjobs are bad, I mean, obviously they're not going to say it like that, but it's just a framing that gives it a little bit more context and makes it feel less personal for me.
Right, because they're playing their role. As a teacher, they need to give you feedback, so they're just doing the thing they need to do, you know?
Yeah, and the implication is, like, as with real-life experiences I've had, where, like, sometimes in school, if someone is like a pretty bad student and is always like slacking off and skipping class, the teacher is probably going to be less inclined to like give them notes, because it's like, well, mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to improve your essay writing really if you can't even, you know, show up to class. Whereas for someone who's like a teacher's pet like me, I would often get like potentially some of the harshest notes just on a surface level of anyone on their essays. But it's because the teachers felt that like I had the potential to actually actualize those notes. So it becomes almost sort of a compliment. All of that sounded like I was bragging for like how smart I was in high school, which is not how I meant it to sound. It's archetypes. It's not reality. People have their reasons for skipping class. I get it. What about you?
Yeah, most of my reasons were sucking dick, but that's a different story for a different podcast. Listen, senior year, I got a car, and they scheduled me for seventh period lunch and eighth period gym. Why the fuck would I stay at school? That's not
no.
That's a stupid. That's their poor planning.
That's on them.
That's on them. That's not on me at all. That's silly. Anyway, I think for me, the biggest thing that comes to mind is service, which is the thing that I've talked about on this show a ton of times. But there are a great many kinks and activities that I will enjoy, particularly in an explicitly servicey headspace. Like if we are building a scene where I am doing something to serve someone or for someone, there are a lot of kinks that I would enjoy in that context, and in that like particularly servicey archetype. And I do identify sometimes with a like more high protocol kind of servicey archetype. For shorter stints, it's not something I can do super long term. But like even like Leather Boy and that sort of stuff is things that I've toyed with and found interesting. And when I am playing, like leaning into that dynamic or that kind of flavor of submission, this more like high protocol thing, that is a particular headspace that I can enjoy versus like, I don't know, my more casual everyday flavors of submission that is less interested in doing everything exactly perfect all the time. Mm-hmm. I want to serve and I want to do well, but I don't want to be paying attention to, is my knee at like the correct angle for this particular pose? Like,
yeah,
that is a thing that is fun in a very particular container for me, but not something that is fun for all flavors of submission that I have.
Yeah, I agree. I get too hypervigilant about like, am I being perfect at all times? And it's like, that's not fun for me anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One listener was wondering where to find inspiration for non-binary / non-gendered archetypes.
That's interesting. In media by other queer and trans folks and in conversation with other queer and trans folks is the only place you're going to find that explicitly. That's like, to be honest. Yeah. Alternatively, I think you're going to find more stuff, or it might be easier to look at these, look at archetypes you find interesting and then just sit down and have kind of a little thought experiment about, well, like, what would this look like through the lens of different genders? Because for me, I think of gender almost like a colored lens that you put over an experience or a human or something, right? It is a filter that we view them through.
Right.
And it is one of the things that impacts how we look at them. So, like, I don't know. I'm thinking about, I really enjoy White Collar, which is, has like kind of a DSE thing going between the two main guys in that show, or I'm a pervert, I don't know. But if you haven't seen the show, you have to trust me. But, like, you can watch that and you can identify with that submissive character and, you know, he's a cis guy in the show, but what would... And, I mean, like, this gay relationship is not canonical either, but I'm seeing it and I'm leaning into it, right? So you right. can look into, well, like, what would he look like if we bring him more androgynous in this direction, right? If androgyny is key to your non-binary, or if he were more fluid and presented in different ways at different times, right? Like... How can I take this archetype that I see in reality and, like, what would it look like through these different lenses? It's extra work because the world, unfortunately, doesn't just hand us these stories and these narratives the way they do to cis-straight folks. Mm-hmm. But I also think we wind up with more interesting narratives this way. So hopefully that is at least a silver lining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. My mind went back to fan fiction. I don't know. My mind's always going back to fan fiction. But the reason being, I think that a lot of fan fiction is either women writing men or queer and trans people writing. And, like, I think in most cases you're going to find that fan fiction is queerer and transer than the media that it's based on. And there's a lot to be found there. I always, by the way, when I search on Archive of Our Own, I always sort by either bookmarks or comments or some other indication of, like, I want to see the ones that people liked the most at the top. Because, you know, just well-written fan fiction is gonna sort of, like, conjure up more images in your head generally than less well-written stuff.
There's a lot of well-written fan fiction, and there's a lot more... other stuff.
Yeah. And also, honestly, like, if you feel at all drawn to writing fan fiction, I think that can be a great way to explore archetypes and your own relation to them as well. Like, I have a fan fiction story about the movie Palm Springs where I envisioned that because they're stuck in this, like, Groundhog Day style time loop, that eventually you would get sort of bored with your gender presentation and might want to fuck around with it a little bit. So I kind of explored what I thought that would look like for those characters. And
love that.
You know, even though it's your own writing, sometimes the images and the archetypes can, like, sort of stick in your head and be inspiration when you're doing scenes. One listener, this is not a question, but they just... suggested that we talk about the archetype of the cis white dominant male. And I thought immediately...
Isn't everyone else doing that enough?
It's true. I thought immediately of Christian Grey, and then I feel like Christian Grey is in some ways based on James Spader's character in Secretary, whose name is Edward Grey. And they're very prototypical in terms of a certain type of, like, modern representation of what dominance looks like. But, like, there's so much other kinds of people doing dominance. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like it's just a conglomeration. Like, those creations are often not by folks in the community, in my experience. I'm not saying they're by folks who aren't turned on by this. Presumably they are, but they're not. They don't tend to be by folks that I think are in community and, like, actively doing this regularly with folks that are doing it. And it feels like it is just a conglomeration of the things that give you power in the real world. And part of what I come to kink for is enjoying playing with, like, handing out power in the ways that I want to, in interesting and subversive ways, and reclaiming it and distorting it and playing with it. And, like, this archetype is just a rich, white, cis businessman who, like, speaks with authority. And I'm like, yeah, that's, why would I want to submit to that? They're, like, already out here running shit. That's boring. It's fine.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, real-life power structures that get baked into these archetypes.
I will say, real briefly, if there are any rich... whatever, folks who do want to throw money at me. I lied. You're not boring. You seem lovely. And I would love to submit to you. That sounds great. Anyway, I just need to put that Just yeah. loudly being like, yes, all rich people who want to throw money at me are boring. I lied. Love you. Anyway.
This reminds me of, I've had discussions with people before about, like, daddy versus mommy as kink honorifics and how, like, they do actually have pretty different connotations in our culture. Like, it's not as if one of them is just sort of the gendered inverse of the other, because they do just, sort of, like, have different associations culturally. And part of that is just, like, if you think of a traditional, like, white Western cishet family dynamic, like, the daddy is going to be the one with more power and is going to be the sort of, like, generally less emotionally present, I would say, archetypally. Whereas a mommy is, like, maybe more focused on, like, caretaking and is more emotionally present and just, like, has different traits. And so in the same way, like, yeah, there's an image of, like, a cis white, straight, able-bodied, dominant man, which is, as you said, like, purely because, like, those are the people who actually do have power in the real world. And so, like, I don't blame people for, like, being drawn to that dynamic, because you've been conditioned all your life to think of those people as the most dominant people. So if you're attracted to dominant people, like, that totally makes sense. But there's so many different kinds of people who can be dominant. And, like, I'm hoping that we see more of that in media so that it kind of, like, absorbs more into the general psyche of the population.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. As always, my name is Kate Sloan. I have a sex blog at girlyjuice.net. I have a weekly newsletter. I just wrote a thing about why I'm, like, super horny for people who are good at Pokemon. Nice. So you can subscribe to that at katesloan.substack.com. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing and information about my workshops at bextalksex.com. I teach every Wednesday night at 7:30 Eastern on Zoom, so you can go to bextalksex.com to get tickets for that, or search Bex Caputo on Eventbrite. I also do other things that you can throw money at me for, theoretically. I'm also very naked on the internet, so you can go over to at Billy Lore on Twitter to find all of the appropriate links for that. If you are interested in throwing money at me over there, don't you worry, I'm real good at telling you how. Together we are the Dildorks. You can go to thedildorks.com or at thedildorks on Twitter and Instagram. You can also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to get you access to exclusive bonuses. For $6 a month, you can get access to our Discord channel, where you can chat with us and the other Dildorks about this week's episode, help us plan future ones, and all kinds of other sexy, dorky things. And for $12 a month, you can get access to our exclusive bonus episodes. I think a new one just dropped today, day of recording. So
yep,
this week.
I edited it today. And some of the things we talked about were that time we almost edited a sex magazine, some of our best sex of the year, including a forced orgasm scene, self-enforced chastity, ass worship, anal sex. We talked a whole lot about anal sex. thigh and Impact, a song I wrote, non-binary exes, sex toy storage. There's, like, a whole bunch of stuff. It's a great episode. Nice. I had a fun time editing it. I want to also say thank you to our top tier Patreon supporters, Nat, Amelia, Matthew, and Stabitha Christie. Thank you so much. Thank you also to Protodome, who did our theme song, I Want You in My Bedroom. Thank you to Amy at Starboots_ on Twitter, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
I had questions here. We're doing a podcast or something.
Yeah, just, I don't know. I'm just remembering all the movies. This is just the Dildorks fan cast. It's fine.
Exactly. It's fine. We're doing great.
I finished my alcohol. Should I go back to the caffeine?
I mean, sure. I suppose.
I'm hype.
Yeah.
It's fine. maybe they're taking a bit of a backseat where they're like, maybe I'm thinking of a different movie. I might be thinking of... is this Alfie where, like, I'm going on a caffeine fueled rant about movies that I don't remember. Never mind. I'm going to rein it back in.
Okay, I'm going to respond to that in podcast voice, but also I have to remind me to recommend a kinky movie to you.
Okay.
If you want to watch Idris Elba boss around one of the Stark boys, and yeah.
Okay.
He's so large, and the other one is so small, and he's just terrified the entire time. Like, Idris Elba is large and competent, and one of the Stark boys, the one that gets red weddings, I forget. I couldn't tell you the actor's name, but he is just wide teary-eyed and terrified the whole time. And it's just like a fun little action movie, and they're very gay, and you should watch it.
Do you know the title, or you have to look it up?
Yeah, it's called The Take.
Okay.
It's on Netflix. Ash and I watched it with Andre, and Andre was like, this is a fun action movie. Like, the violence is disrespectful. This is delightful. Like, they're fun fight scenes. And Ash and I are like, this is gay. This is horny. This is aggressively gay. They made it for us. Anyway. Like, this movie is horny. Anyway.
Reader interpretation is valid.
Yes.